We're continuing our week-long Wisconsin Life series focusing on literacy in Wisconsin. One aspect of literacy that doesn't get much coverage is health literacy. It doesn't matter how well you read English, anyone can have trouble following medical instructions and interpreting advice from healthcare professionals.
Dr. Paul Smith is with us to talk about health literacy here in Wisconsin. He's the medical advisor for Wisconsin Literacy, and he's a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. Dr. Smith, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me on.
So, in a nutshell, what do we mean when we say health literacy?
Well, health literacy is kind of a confusing phrase. You know, people hear the word literacy and they think about ability to read, which is what you've been hearing about a lot this week. But health literacy is really about people finding, understanding, and acting on health information.
And that could be in printed form, a medicine label, I suppose. But it's also, I guess, understanding what your healthcare professional is telling you, the instructions they're giving you.
Right. It could be text, like on a website or a document, or, of course, when you're talking to somebody. And be honest, a lot of healthcare is done back and forth verbally, you know, saying things and hearing things and that sort of thing.
And is the medical profession, the healthcare profession, starting to think we need to do more with health literacy because all the great ideas, the great advice in the world won't help if the people don't really come away understanding what it is?
Well, there's definitely an increased awareness. I mean, this was really a relatively new issue. Even 20 years ago, it was just beginning to be talked about. But nationally, locally, internationally, there's more and more awareness that it is a problem. There is issues with effective communication, whether it's text or verbally, and increasing efforts to try to do a better job at it and to learn more, research, things like that.
Well, let's visit the doctor's office now and talk about what kind of things in that interaction can be an obstacle for the patient. What kind of hurdles do we see in health literacy?
Well, there's a bunch of different things that can happen. I mean, often, to be honest, people are not very prepared when they walk through the door, so they may have concerns or questions or that sort of thing. But if they haven't written them down or thought about them very much ahead of time, they're going to have trouble communicating those to whoever's going to try to help them. And so, you know, that lack of preparedness starts things off on the wrong foot. And then once the interaction gets going a little bit better, there's this tendency because people who work in the healthcare industry, we learn all these words and acronyms and phrases that become second nature and pretty quickly forget that everybody else in the world doesn't know these words and phrases. And so we start talking in jargon that people don't understand. And the patients, and we're all patients, to be honest, at some point in time, we're ultimately all going to be a patient, tend to be afraid to ask questions. They don't want to look stupid or feel bad, or they may think the doctor's in a rush or whatever, and they just won't ask clarifying questions.
Well, let's tackle those problems before we move on to other potential hurdles. For that, the insider talk you mentioned, the jargon, what are healthcare professionals doing to try to make sure they're speaking a language that everyone else is speaking?
Well, some things that are happening, the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine Public Health is redesigning their curriculum, and just, you know, they've just been doing that over the last year, and I was on a committee that was working on that, and one of the things that they're going to be trying to change is teaching medical students as they go through school about effective verbal communication and written communication so that from the very beginning they're more aware of the issue and trying to do a better job and watching out for the jargon and that sort of thing. I'm involved in educating residents who are doctors who've finished medical school and are learning how to be a family physician. And one of the things I talk about is you really need to have two vocabularies, one for your colleagues with all the jargon and words that we use all the time, and another one for your patients. And I tell them that if they could explain it like they were going to talk to their grandmother over the kitchen table, that probably patients are going to get it.
And on the patient side, you mentioned patients coming in not knowing what they want to ask, what kind of important information they should communicate. What do patients need to know when they go into the doctor's office?
Well, a lot of it is just knowing why you're there and what are the questions, what are the concerns, and to be honest, getting those on the table, getting them out at the very beginning of the visit. I mean, that's really the most important thing to understand. And then toward the end, to not leave unless you understand what's going on, whatever it is, whether it's preventive care or treatment for a problem or an illness or a chronic condition, something like that, what they're supposed to do about it, and why it's important to do those things. And so it's on them to say, hey, I didn't get it. You tried, but it didn't make sense to me. try again. And to be honest, if doctors are busy and we're all in a rush at times, but if they're not getting an answer, they can ask, well, who else could I talk to? Could I talk to a nurse or someone else that could help me out with this and so I can understand a little bit better?
One thing I wonder sometimes in the doctor's office is if I'm in there for thing A and there's some other data out there, and I don't know a headache, but my left knee is numb. I don't know. Do you volunteer potentially irrelevant information? Is that overloading the doctor with unnecessary detail, or is it maybe a valuable clue?
There's a good question. Actually, what's really helpful, especially when there's a new problem, like a numb knee or whatever, pain in your toe, is to be ready with tell the story about what happened. So, when did it start? What did it feel like? How did it change over time? Did you try anything at home to try to make it better? Does anything that you do make it better or make it worse? So, and try to make that reasonably concise, and then let the doctor ask questions as time goes on. It's often people haven't even thought of, well, what really was it? How long ago was that? And those things often can be pretty important.
Talking to Dr. Paul Smith about health literacy here in Wisconsin. Now, a key part of this is that a patient who's in seeing a healthcare professional for a condition, a problem, comes away knowing what the doctor wants them to do. They know what their course of action is, how often to take the medication, what exercise to do, the dietary, whatever. How do we make sure that the patients come out of the office with that down? And should we be, in some cases, people bring a note taker, I know, for serious conditions?
Yeah, that's a common recommendation, especially for somebody who can't hear very well or older folks, especially. And to be honest, no matter how old you are, it's really hard to remember things when you're listening and talking and trying to process things and then try to remember all that stuff as well. So, and it's really hard to take notes yourself to do that. So to have someone else along is a great idea. Two sets of ears are always better than one set of ears when you're listening to things. The other thing is healthcare professionals that we can do, and this is more common with electronic health records now, is we can actually type out instructions, go over them with the patient, and then print that off and hand it to them so that they have this list in front of them to help remind them of some of the main topics and then the details about what was said about those different things.
And how about post-visit follow-up? Are people too shy or do they not know where to go if they need that clarification? What was I supposed to do?
Yeah, that's also a really good question. Every doctor's office is a little bit different sometimes, but there's always somebody there that can answer follow-up questions. Sometimes on the way out, when people are leaving, they'll think of something and they could talk to the nurse or even ask the receptionist if there's somebody they could talk to, and usually there's a nurse or somebody that's available. But later on, when they call in, often people will say, gee, I need to talk to the doctor, but we're so busy, we can't be on the phone all the time with the patients. So again, there's almost always a nurse or somebody who will field questions, often can answer the easy questions. And if something needs the doctor's attention, then they can pass the question on to the doctor, get an answer, get back to the patient, and get the answer that they need. And one sort of word that sometimes hits right is called the triage. Triage is actually a military term for somebody who decides what's most important. But the triage nurse or the triage person fields the call and decides, what to do with it. Is it urgent or not? And try to get answers and help people decide what to do next.
Another obvious obstacle, I guess, is this is often a stressful situation. Somebody comes in, they've got a problem, maybe a problem that's life-threatening in now or in the future. How can patients, how can healthcare professionals make sure that the important stuff gets through when the mind is occupied on a very serious thing?
Yeah, that's a really hard one because it's not something the patient can control, mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. You can be highly literate, very intelligent, know all kinds of things about medical stuff, and hear bad news. Oh, you have cancer. First time people hear those words, everything just sort of shuts down. It's just noise. They're not really processing anything. Oh, I have cancer. All the stuff's going through their mind. But you could be sleep deprived. You could be stressed, as you mentioned. You could be in pain. You could be afraid. All of those emotions interfere with the ability to understand and process and remember and all of those things. And that's not really something anybody can control. You could acknowledge, oh, gee, I'm in this situation, so I need some extra help to understand things. And then it's on, it really, the it's on the healthcare providers and the people that are providing the information to recognize that in folks and know that they're going to have to talk with them again later when they can process things better.
We're talking to Dr. Paul Smith with UW-Madison, looking at health literacy. He's the medical advisor, by the way, at Wisconsin Literacy.
And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about health literacy? And what do you do to learn about your medical conditions and about the health system? And what resources do you go to? If you're a healthcare provider, how do you make sure patients are understanding what you're telling them? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation now with Dr. Paul Smith talking about health literacy.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. As a patient or maybe a family member of a patient or as a healthcare provider yourself, have you seen problems with communication, with making sure important health information is communicated in those visits? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Before we get to callers, Dr. Smith, we are talking about literacy all week and efforts to improve it here in Wisconsin. So around the state, what are we doing when it comes to boosting our health literacy?
Well, a lot of the work that's been done around Wisconsin over the last 13 years that I've been involved in it has been mostly awareness raising, just getting out in front of medical audiences and other health audiences just to tell people about this issue and start to encourage them to start to pay attention and do things about that. And the previous interview that you had with Michelle Erickson, I've been working with her and the folks in Wisconsin Literacy for quite a while, and we've been putting on conferences about health literacy starting 12 years ago was the first one, and we put our sixth one on this spring, and it's really grown to the point where this last one that we had over 300 people from 22 different states and three countries come to Wisconsin to learn about health literacy. So we were able to continue to raise awareness, spread what's been going on in Wisconsin so people can learn what's working and how to try to move forward on it. There's also, because of those efforts, there's a lot of organizations and people around the state of Wisconsin that are trying different things and trying to improve communication in hospitals and clinics. And there's been a variety of projects that I've been involved in. One of them is looking at the prescription label. You mentioned that. And sometimes it is hard for people to understand that information. And there's some guidelines out there for how to make it easier to understand those. And we're working on a project to have some local pharmacies make those changes so that it will be a little easier for people to understand what they're reading on the prescription label.
Let's bring in a caller now at 800-642-1234. We've got Christine on the line in Eau Claire. Christine, hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I just spent the last week in January in the hospital as an advocate for my dad, who just turned 81. He had endovascular surgery, and the surgeon actually had discharged him, yet we were in the family waiting room talking with the discharge planner, saying he is not ready to be discharged. And it was a mess. He ended up having a stroke and had to go to the neurological floor. I just wonder how that happens, that one physician can say, yep, he's ready to rock and roll, and the nursing staff, I don't know how that works, how the communication works with the nursing staff and the physicians.
Christine, thanks a lot for the call, and I'm really sorry about that situation. Good luck to you and your family. But Dr. Smith, if a patient's in that situation, let's go on that communication side here, and they're hearing two different things maybe from healthcare professionals, how do they make sure they advocate and get something sorted?
Yeah, that's a really tough one, especially when you're hearing two different things from different clinicians or different a pharmacy and a physician, for example, who are not saying the same thing. It's that ask questions and be sure you understand. People need to raise the issue. I'm hearing this from one person. I'm hearing something else from the other person. What should I do? Can they two get together and sort of figure it out and, you know, somehow get back to us so that we know exactly what the thing, you know, what we should be doing? And the caller actually raises a really important issue. That's called a transition of care, when one goes from a hospital to home or hospital to a nursing home or something like that. And communication is especially difficult. And it's especially fraught with error. It's very common for things to not quite get done correctly in those kind of transitions. And again, there are organizations that are working hard to try to do a better job at it, but you know, things still happen.
You mentioned earlier technology being a boon in a way. You can really print off very specific information for a patient, for one thing. Is technology also helping that sort of handoff situation from one, say, one institution to another or one physician to another?
It can if it's done well. You know, one thinks that all the information from a particular health record, for example, is available to everybody, but in fact it's not. They're not interchangeable, and there's issues of confidentiality, so you have to be careful about who has access to the information and things like that. So I think technology more has the promise to really facilitate things, and sometimes it can work really well. Again, system is changing and trying to do a better job using the technology.
And staying with the health literacy and technology aspect, we have the internet now, and somebody might get a diagnosis or might have a symptom and look online and find things that are scary and unrelated, or they've got the right diagnosis and a really bizarre prescription. How is this part of health literacy, trying to sift and winnow, if you will, what's out there?
Absolutely. It happens all the time. People come in and say, I looked up this, or I think I have that, or that sort of thing. And probably the most important thing is to know the source, to understand you can find anything that will say anything on the internet practically. And so you want to look for a reliable source, a national organization for a particular health issue or health problem, like the American Diabetes Association for diabetes questions or things like that, or a medical school or some other reliable source, rather than just, you know, not paying attention to what that address is or what the organization is, where the information is coming from.
As we wrap up, if you had just one message for patients, which at some point, as you say, is all of us, when it comes to health literacy, what would you tell us?
Don't walk away when you do not understand.
Right.
Ask questions, and if you're not getting answers, push harder until you get answers. And to be honest, if you're interacting with a particular provider and you're not getting answers out of them, think about another provider.
And a quick message for the providers.
Well, start paying attention, folks, if you're not already, because checking understanding, being sure people actually understand, especially about medication use, that's probably the most important thing, because so many bad things happen when people don't take medicines right, that we need to make sure we get that correct.
Dr. Smith, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Dr. Paul Smith. He's medical advisor for Wisconsin Literacy and a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. He joined us to talk about health literacy in Wisconsin.
This interview is part of a week-long Wisconsin Life series focusing on literacy in Wisconsin. Tune in to Morning Edition at 6:30 and 8:30 a.m. and Central Time at 4:15 each day this week for more stories and interviews. You can also listen to archived segments at WPR.org by searching Wisconsin Literacy.